Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry, where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.
Exploring our oneness with Spirit and each other. Unity Online Radio.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, where it's thankfully a little bit cooler right now. This is November 22nd when we're going out live, and we've had a very warm fall, so it's nice to have some cool weather. Today, our focus turns to ancient Egyptian spirituality, which is a fascinating subject, and the mystical tradition that is still out alive today. We'll hear about the secrets of the adepts and their the many correlations there are with the teachings of unity. Joining me is speaker, author, and co-founder of Living in Truth, James Phillips. Jim has dedicated his life to making the wisdom of ancient Egypt relevant to us today. He's been to Egypt over 30 times, which is amazing, and studied with wisdom keepers there. He's a graduate of the Monroe Institute in Virginia and has been heavily involved with Agape International in Los Angeles, done many of their programs there. So it's a pleasure to welcome Jim Phillips to today's show. Welcome, Jim.
Thank you, Reverend John. Reverend Paul, I really appreciate the chance to be on your show. And that was a lovely, lovely lead-in. The recording was very nice. I enjoyed very much. Really fits the Egyptian mystical tradition very well.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. That's our new sounds that we put on a couple of years ago. I had some Oriental ones, and I've got sort of more of African one right now. But, yeah, we like to give an idea that we're entering a world beyond just our normal Western viewpoint. We're embracing all cultures and traditions. You know,
yeah,
my first question is
the copy would have read like something I wrote in an article.
Oh, there we go then. Well,
yeah,
very good.
Exactly.
You know, they're called mystery schools, aren't they? And they teach esoteric truth or wisdom, which is sort of hidden wisdom as opposed to exoteric. And yet, the spiritual path is an open secret. So, you know, it's at the same time a mystery and kind of hidden, and yet that secret is open to anyone that has ears to hear and eyes to see, as Jesus put it. So talk about that, the sort of conundrum of it being an open secret.
Absolutely. The Egyptian sacred mystery schools are possibly tens of thousands of years old, back even before recorded dynastic Egypt. And the tradition is kept alive by the oral wisdom keepers called the Sejdi, which means experts at rejuvenation. And I had the privilege to work with a couple of them, particularly Dr. Hakim, who is quite famous in the archaeological circles. And in my many trips there, he worked extensively with me by sending me out to a location like Abu Simbel and saying, oh, here's the spiritual significance of this location, and meditate on that and get very quiet and do as the old mystics would have done on that location find out its significance, its spiritual value for you. And over the time, I began to realize that even though the mysteries were, quotes, secrets and supposedly reserved for only the priests, it's because the material itself was so in depth and so much gold nuggets, if you will, in our modern parlance, that it took an intelligent mind, an open mind, to receive this material. And particularly with the Egyptian, it's like peeling the layers of an onion. I mean, the more you think you learn, the more there is left to learn. So when we say that it was an open secret and open to the masses, it could have been, but the masses basically weren't interested in it, as you can imagine. But those that were gravitated into the temples and became what we call candidate initiates in the sacred mysteries. And they basically were trained and accepted into the temples at 7 years old as neophytes. And they were trained the way you and I would have gone to school at that same age. They took sciences and maths and reading and writing and arithmetic. And at 14 years old, they had a major decision to make. Did they truly want to be candidates to the sacred mysteries and become initiated through the seven major initiations that would have been confirm you as a mystic in the sacred mysteries? And so they studied each year in a different temple along the Nile, from Dahshur all the way up to Abu Rosh. And each year they practiced getting ready for that initiation related to what you and I call chakras. And that's the information that's not very well known to Western audiences, that this Egyptian sacred mystery schools practice the concept of initiating each chakra very, very in-depth to put it in alignment with what was called the Amakuha, which we call the higher self today.
And right.
So the whole goal of the 7 years of training, if you can imagine, every day they practiced meditation as we would do in Unity, and they became adept. That's why I initially called this, although I'm changing the material, because Kansas City is, in my discussions, is really thinking we're better off with the word secrets of the mystics. So we'll probably change all this to that, because that's right. Actually a little more right on to point, if you know what I mean. And so what you as a candidate initiate in the sacred mysteries would have done thousands of years ago is study each day, practicing for the root chakra initiation that you're going to have to pass, not unlike how we go through middle school, high school, and college and get a higher degree, like a PhD. That's the essence of it. So if you can, it was open, but yet not everybody goes to college in our time, more, of course, and your final graduation was in the Great Pyramid, where you were led in by your, interesting word, Pastophorus, which survived into our modern time like a lot of other teachings from the mystery schools, particularly oneness teachings. And your Pastophorus would have led you into the Great Pyramid, King's Chamber. You would have lain down in the very famous a stone coffer, and they would put a 1.5-ton lid over your head and go away and come back 72 hours later and see if you survived.
Yeah, right. Yeah, symbolic death, but it was getting pretty close to the real death.
Exactly. In fact, so symbolic that the first time it was witnessed by a Greek philosopher named Herodotus, in about 600 BC, he could not understand what happened in that stone coffer, so he coined the word sarcophagus for it, thinking they had died. When they didn't, they had an out-of-body experience, to use our modern language.
Yeah, it's like going into those sensory deprivation chambers, you know, where
you
go into all kinds of psychic states, don't you? You go through fear, you go through exhilaration and ecstasy, and eventually, if it works well, I think you enter into a place of very great knowledge and peace, you know.
Exactly.
But if you're not ready for it, it can be extremely frightening, and You could be overwhelmed by all the forces that are within our subconscious realm. So it's definitely something you don't want to do until you're ready to receive that initiation, that particular initiation.
Interesting that you brought that up, because I had a lady, I've been teaching the course called now it's going to be the Secrets of the Mystics Workshop in the Great Lakes region of Unity. And one of the ladies that signed up for my workshop came up to me and says, I've had this horrible experience of being in a tight, dark place and not being able to breathe, and it affected my sleep patterns all of my life. And, you know, what do you have for me, Obi-Wan Kenobi? And, you know, it's that kind of thing. And so I said, okay, well, let's go through the workshop, because we're going to initiate each of your seven chakras, literally, here in the workshop. And you're going to be taught in the way the candidate initiates were in the mystery schools. And we'll go through the graduation as it was in the King's Chamber thousands of years ago and see. And so she experienced the opening of the way imagination, which was the final, the seventh initiation, the one for the crown chakra. And she came to me later and she said, I believe I was one of those candidate initiates that did it too quickly against the advice of my priest, Pastor Forrest, and I probably succumbed inside the stone box. It's been something that carried through into this life. And she said, I think I let it go.
Very fascinating.
Isn't it?
You know, coming back to that open secret idea, I think it was Jesus in the Gospel of Thomas said the kingdom of heaven is spread out over the earth and people don't see it. And I'm reminded with, you know, your fascination with this and bringing this these secret teachings to us right now. I'm reminded of Tibetan Buddhism and the diaspora of the Tibetans leaving Tibet because of, you know, Chinese occupation. And yet they brought these what were secret teachings in the Tibetan tradition for several centuries, maybe thousands of years, to a wider public. You know, certainly brought them to the West, brought them to India and then the West, and things that would have been not shared, you know, are now being shared. And I think maybe we're ready, aren't we, in our modern society to take on some of these deeper understandings. And I think part of the reason for this, and the Hopis have said this too, you know, that their teachings were secret, but now they're willing to share aspects of them. Maybe the stakes are higher now, right? We have the opposite of wisdom in our world sometimes, and so we need these deeper teachings now to help us through some of the more tough times that we're facing.
Exactly. The Sejdi, obviously the Egyptian, which they are Coptic Christians by faith primarily, but underneath they're keeping the sacred wisdom alive. The Islamic culture would persecute the people I'm speaking to about that worked with me. So it's a little bit, you know, under the table, but they were very, very upfront about saying we're in something that was described as the time of choosing in the ancient traditions.
Yeah.
And in this time of choosing, the planet itself is our mother, our Gaia, is going through a evolution of consciousness as well. And this higher consciousness is being exacerbated by climate control and things like that, problems. And we as conscious, what the Egyptians call mind-body-spirit complexes, which is, you know, no matter what you look like, you could be a, you know, amphibian being swimming in an acid sea in Andromeda 21. It doesn't matter. If you have a mind, a body, and a spirit, you are a conscious being, and you're part of what they call the law of one, which is oneness, to be exact. And they said, you know, that in this time of choosing, this human culture, the culture we are, the society we are, all over this planet, we're moving more and more to a time that if we don't raise our consciousness to the level of the Earth's consciousness, which in the sacred mystery schools is taught as the fourth density of consciousness, that you won't be allowed to reincarnate on this planet. You will have to reincarnate on a lower density, third density planet in the future, which is an amazing teaching, and, you know, we should talk more about this.
Fascinating stuff.
Those that are what you and I would term as an evil consciousness that constantly thinks an evil thought and acts out evil thought, that kind of consciousness will be denied entry into this new fourth density earth, and we're in the middle of this now, which is a comforting thought given everything that we're surrounded by now and all the negative news information we're getting. Rather,
because in unity, we would suggest that we have all these aspects within us, right? So when we see those negativities in others, it's because there's the seed of it within ourselves, and so it inspires us to compassion because we realize, oh my goodness, you know, they may be exhibiting this clearly, but if I can see it there, it must be within me. So therefore, exactly. Our job is to help lift everybody up. You know, it's interesting you mention all this because right now I think unity as a movement is going through a time of renewal, you know, and change. And I know the world headquarters there, Unity Village, you know, looking at new initiatives that they can do to bring our message to more and more people in an effective way. And we have a new CEO, as you know, Jim Blake, and you know, he's already going gangbusters with new ideas, which is wonderful. But I think it's a choice point, like you said, of our history. You know, I always say in our community that the greatest enemy of the spiritual path is not sin, you know, which traditional churches sort of talk a lot about sin. I think the greatest impediment, if you like, is complacency. You know, we put off till tomorrow what we need to do today. We say, oh, well, when all the circumstances are just right, we'll do it. But, you know, the truth is we have to act now, right, with what we have, where we are, and knowing that now is the time. Now is the time to embody these higher principles. And I think that's both trepidatious but also exciting, isn't it? Because it's like,
it is,
wow,
it
we're true. At an awesome time in our history, you know, to embody these. And I know you're excited about that, Jim, because you're
Every conversation I've had with people at Unity Worldwide Ministries, David Ridge was a good example. I had a long conversation with him about a month ago, and he was part of this dealing with the new innovation, the revival, if you will, of some of reaching out in unity. And he said, you know, we believe our core message would appeal to something like 25 to 30 million Christians that claim to be spiritual but are members of other organizations, either, you know,
right, exactly,
other churches or whatever. And he said, we believe we're maybe getting 0.1% of them actually visit our churches. And that just, whoa, are you kidding me, David? That's all? And he said, yeah. And he said, you know, there's so much about unity that would be of appeal to them. And I'll give you one of the examples of the bridge. I'm not a biblical scholar, mind you. I mean, my thing is the ancient mysteries of Egypt. But I had a gentleman took my workshop, and he was. And he said, you know, you really opened my eyes to something. You know, being a minister, I'm sure you're aware, and I'm not aware, but there's 17 years missing of Joshua ben David, Jesus, the historical Jesus, life. Roughly in the Bible, in the New Testament, he leaves at around 13 years old, and we don't find him again until around 30. I could be off on a year or two, but that's, you know, roughly about. There are 17 years missing in the Bible that we don't know really what happened to him.
We're not
told what happened to him, I should say, but we're given a hint that his parents went back to Egypt land, as they had done, you know, at his birth time, you know, it's just a hint, and then he leaves. And when I read that, I went, that was like an aha moment. Or when he mentioned this, I said, well, that was like an aha moment for me, because that's exactly the age at 14 that he would have been accepted into the mystery schools. And obviously he was very precocious and psychic and, you know, advanced, I mean, self-evidently. And he likely went through the mystery school tradition, becoming very adept at what I the nuts and bolts I try to teach, and that helped him perform his miracles later on. And maybe he went out and did a, I've read a couple documentaries that he might have had his first mission in India and spent some earlier time after this time, and that would account for his 17 years. Now, if we would teach these kind of things more, we would attract a Christian audience to Unity. Is what I'm driving at, I guess.
Right. Yeah. Okay. It's interesting, isn't it, how we fill in the gaps there with our own understanding of what Jesus may or may not have done. You know, and I think it's attractive to say, oh yeah, he went to India. You know, he learned from the gurus there. Some people say he went to Tibet. Say he went down into Egypt and studied the mystery schools. And it's all plausible because ultimately. Truth is one, as you know, and therefore, when we touch the hem of the garment of truth, we get the whole picture. And so, you know, all these teachings, all these traditions have an aspect of the truth. So when we studied them, we noticed the correlations between our particular path and other paths. And Jesus, because he was a universalist teacher, seems to come from all these traditions because he resonates with the same core that's in all these traditions. So it, you know, the answer is it could have been, but it may not have been at all, because when somebody touches the oneness, when somebody is in tune as Jesus was, then we resonate with them. You know, whatever tradition mm-hmm. we're coming from, if we go beyond the surface of ritual and tradition into the heart of it, we say, oh yeah, that's the same thing I'm teaching, you know, because ultimately the teachings, I believe, you know, because that's the way I come from. It's the teachings are one, right? When the mystical tradition is one tradition.
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, if you do a Wikipedia research, just go on Google and look in Wikipedia, you will see that the mystical teachings are embedded in all the world's religions.
Right.
All of them.
Folks,
the Sufis, for an example, in the Islamic tradition, are the ultimate practitioner of mysticism. And
there
the
we
search
go.
For the search for absolute truth, the search for what you and I to be able to perform miracles, to make changes in your life, to do astounding things you didn't think yourself possible. It is possible through the power of the mystical tradition. And what I've done is tried what Hakim and his people said, when you go back to the States, just you'll be, you know, working with Americans, put this, and you've got a marketing background your whole life, put this in terms that don't get lost in that hermetic philosophy and big long
right.
words. Put it in terms people can understand. And I think Dr. Tom, I use his
I've got to cut you off, Jim. We need to go to the break.
Oh, okay.
But we'll come right back, but we've got to get to those breaks.
Okay.
I'm with Jim Phillips, and we're talking about the teachings of the Egyptian mystery schools and teachings of the adepts, or what he likes to call the teachings of the mystics. And we'll be back in a couple of minutes. I want to talk to Jim about this word he's coined, imaginization. So let's find out what imaginization is when we come back after the break. Join us then.
As Unity Online Radio continues to expand its programming and outreach to the world, we count on the support of listeners like you. Please make your donation today. Go to www.unity.fm and click on Donate Now.
This Christmas, recall the childlike joy of the holidays with The Wonder of Christmas, a new Advent booklet from Unity. Request or download your free booklet today at unity.org/UOR Advent. The Wonder of Christmas supports your Advent journey with inspirational messages, scripture, uplifting stories, beautiful poems, and more. Download or request your free copy today at unity.org/UOR Advent. That's unity.org/UOR Advent. But hurry. Advent begins November 27th.
Now available, YouPray, the free prayer app from Silent Unity. For more than a century, people from all over the world and all walks of life have turned to Silent Unity. With YouPray, our confidential prayer support is easy and convenient to access. With YouPray, you can send your prayer directly to Silent Unity. YouPray also includes affirmations you can share with family and friends, plus audio meditations for your prayer time. For more about the free YouPray app and links to download, visit silentunity.org/app. That's silentunity.org/app.
Listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm with Jim Phillips, James Phillips, and he's studied with the mystery tradition of the wisdom keepers of Egypt, and has put together a wonderful system in, like he said at the end of the first segment, in terms and ways that can be understood easily by Western folks, stripped away some of the more esoteric words and ways of approach to make it clearer. And it has many correlations with the spiritual path that we're familiar with. Of course, the very number seven, the seven chakras, the seven initiations, we see that holy number seven, the number of completion, right, popping up everywhere in spirituality. It's part of a tradition that we're familiar with. You mentioned something earlier, Jim, about, you know, sort of breaking down the barriers of what's possible. And I just been reading about a lady named Martina Abramovic, and she's a performance artist. And she comes out of Yugoslavia, what was Yugoslavia. And she's 70 now. She's just written a memoir. And she was brought up in a very hostile environment by parents who were quite privileged. They were war heroes against the Nazis, but they treated her very poorly. But she learned to deal with pain in a different way. And so her performances are about cutting herself and freezing herself and standing with another person with a bow and arrow, with the arrow pointed to her heart, and they're holding this stance, and we, you know, strange and wonderful things like this. And she stood for, she sat for 28 days at the Museum of Modern Art, and let people just walk up to her and look at her. I don't know how she could do that, but wow. She said that, you know, when we're just basically blindly happy, we're not learning anything. We're not growing. You know, we're not ready for any kind of change. But when we confront pain and suffering, we go through into, it's just like a doorway to secrets, a doorway that opens up something, and we realize how much there's beyond pain, because we fear pain and therefore we shrink away from it. But right. She's learned to embrace it, and it's similar to the initiation in the in the tomb, isn't it? It's the idea of going beyond your fears and realizing
that there's more. 7 years studying in the temples, not unlike the way we go to school, practicing creative visualization, making a mental movie, and trying to manifest that movie and bring it in through the law of attraction. But the whole goal was to survive in the final initiation, which I call the opening of the way, your fear of the death of your body. To recognize that you are an eternal spiritual soul made in the image and likeness of God, and that is your ability to use thought, to use your mind, and that is the soul's house. And then when the soul escapes your body at the physical death, that's what survives. So that was what the Egyptian mystery schools taught thousands and thousands of years ago, and it got survived into the religions of our world today. And some of it's been misconstrued, some of it changed and altered, but that's the essence of the final initiation, was your victory over physical death.
Right, fascinating stuff, isn't it? That this, and I think, you know, sometimes we settle for much less than, you know, even if we're on the spiritual path, we're still kind of timid in what we're able to embrace. You know, you think about some of the adepts in India, for instance, you know, some of the gurus or fakirs that bury themselves alive for weeks and or stand on one leg or hold their arm up for decades or whatever. You know, they do crazy things, but they're again, showing that they can move beyond the physical.
My own sister is a good example of this embedded belief system that we were given from birth through our parents, which can limit our own expression as mind-body-spirit entities. My sister took, she was 6 years older than I, and she took piano lessons all through her life from like 4 or 5, and she's really good. And at 11th grade, she had a teacher who said, "You're not quite good enough to be a concert pianist." And I did not know that this had happened, but she accepted that. It became a deeply embedded belief inside her, and she taught music in the Ohio school system for 43 years. So she had a wonderful life, but she always felt that she could have been this concert pianist and gone out on the stage and, you know, achieved that. And she told herself, because this other person gave her this belief system, that it was not possible. And that's what I really fight hard in this workshop, in the Secrets of the Mystics workshop. My goal is to show you that because you have the tools in your tool bag to manifest whatever it is that makes your heart sing, that is the truth inside you that wants to be expressed. And my goal is to give you those tools, and let's destroy those embedded beliefs that said, "I can, I shouldn't," and let's let go of this "I can't be enough" kind of
thing. Yeah, it's a very good point.
We work hard on that in the workshop, frankly.
Many teachers in the, you know, esoteric traditions or spiritual traditions really can be hard on the adept or the student, and often treat them very poorly. You know, there's many stories in Zen tradition, for instance, of how masters really abuse their students. And part of it, I think, is to break down the ego. But part of it is to see the tenacity of the student. So sometimes when they say, "Oh, you'll never make it," you know, what they're really saying is, do you have it in you to make
it?
So, you know, if we take it at face value, right, that they were saying, "Oh, you'll never quite make it," then we have a missed opportunity. But if we say, you know, "Who are you to say this? I'm going to continue," because we know many people in history who have been told no, right, over and over again, but they've chosen to say, "I don't think I'm going to obey that. You know, I'm going to go on." There's been many people who have failed greatly but kept going. I think Winston Churchill said that. You know, the only difference between a success and failure is, you know, failure is something that happens to us all. But a successful person is somebody that gets up each time they fail and keeps going. So, you know, that's a tough one, though, isn't it? Because we take it personally, and if we admire the person who tells us, "Well, you're not quite good enough," we tend to believe them, and then we have a missed opportunity. Then we really—that's a sad state of affairs when we allow that to happen. Again, it's external rather than internal. You know, a true guide is an internal guide, right?
And a true mystic, a graduate of the mystery schools, would realize that no one out there has more knowledge or the ability to tell me how I can or cannot do something. Another way they put it is, there's nobody between God and me but me. And so that teaching survives into today. I mean, that's what oneness is about. And God's stuff inside me is the God's stuff inside everything in the universe. And the more I learn how to listen to my, well, in the Egyptian words, the Amakuha, the more I can can be in open to the information given to me by my higher self, which loves me more than anything or anybody else could possibly on this dimension, then the better I'll be able to make changes in my life, and the better I'll be able to be of service. They were very strongly of service. It's another misconception of the mystery schools, is that they were like monks, cloistered away and spent all day long in their ivory towers. They were more like therapists, more like psychologists and the like. Their day job was to counsel like you do at the church. And they were on their path, their journey, through their 7 years of training. But after it, they would, work with, they would literally be priestesses of Isis and priests of Amun, and they had, worked with the people to help them through the power of creative visualization, which is sort of why I invented this word.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, when Hakim and his people, I came down one time from, I should have mentioned at the beginning, I lived in Europe for 11 years. And so it was very easy for me to get to Egypt. I lived in Paris and then London and then in Ireland for 5 years. And the greater part of 10 years of the 11, I went to Egypt. And then towards the end of it, in the late, about Y2K time, 2000 time, I went there about once a month almost. And one of the trips down, Hakim and two other gentlemen said, we've had a vision for you. And I said, what's this? And they said, well, you're going to go back to America. I said, I don't think so. I've been living here. I don't want to go back. And they said, nah, your spirits talked to us and showed us a vision, and you're going to go back and start to teach this work. And I said, well, that's okay. And then they said, and moreover, you're going to go inside a sound recording studio and record what we have taught you in words, music, sound effects, and make it very, very easy for Western audiences to be initiated in the seven initiations, because you've recorded them and talked them through it. And I said, oh, you are tripping out, Hakim. I am not going in some... There's no way I'm going inside a sound recording studio. Okay, so now life changes. I got to come back to America. I resist this work. I don't do it. And I'm living in L.A., and I called up one of my best buddies and I said, yeah, I'm moving to Chicago. I've met a lady I'm in love, and we're going to go to Chicago, and yada, yada, yada. So he said, well, you're getting close to Des Moines where I live, and this is a really old friend of mine. And so I went down to visit him. He said, what's this thing you got about Egyptian stuff? I said, well, I'll give you the whole story. This is what they said was going to happen. I was going to come back and do this kind of teaching and do this work. And they even said I was going to go in a sound recording studio and record all this material, hundreds of hours of material, and edit it down, yada, yada. And he said, well, that is strange. My best friend that I went to University of Colorado with owns Kiss FM here in Des Moines. So guess what? I got thousands of dollars worth of studio time and music and sound effects all given to me. Now, that's spirit at work,
There we go. Well, congratulations.
Yeah, there's no way I could afford it to have done that. But anyway, what the word imaginization, when I started to get serious about this, I said, well, I've got a marketing background. How can we make some of this esoteric material easier to understand? Because at the heart of the sacred mysteries is the notion that through the power of your imagination blended with creating a creative visualization about what you want and what sings to you, which is what the Egyptians called the sound of truth, so that it almost at a cellular level, this visualization you're making about what you're trying to change feels so joyful you almost cry from it. You feel so good about it. That I call an imaginization. So to repeat it, those are the heart and soul of the initiation. I've created an imaginization using words, sound effects, music to create a movie, a mental movie in the listener's mind that they practice the material that would initiate their root chakra and then the sacral and the solar, and they work up to the crown. Okay?
Wow.
That's what an imaginary, my branded word to try to describe something that, to try to make it real simple, that it's through your practicing of making this movie that you can really overcome the density of our third density environment and attract in what you really want to change in your life. Okay?
Well, you know, and Charles Fillmore, of course, talked a lot about imagination as being the key, idea in building the world you want, because we literally create our own reality. And actually, I was talking with Gary Renard on last week's show about that, because he's big into the Course in Miracles and
yes.
and the fact that the illusory nature of reality, is a play, isn't it? It's a play of forces, if you like, that we have charge over through our creative thought and a creative imagination. And this is very fascinating stuff. We all live in different worlds of our own imagining in many regards. So we literally can build what we would like to see through that power. I think here's a question I have for you, Jim.
Yeah.
When we start doing this work, it's a bit like not being prepared to get into the sarcophagus. When we're doing this work, there's a tendency of the ego to supplant mm-hmm. The spiritual path, as Chogyam Trungpa used to say, it was spiritual materialism. We tend to spiritualize our ego, but we're still the ego doing its thing. So how do we avoid that? Because it's easy to get on sort of a trip where we think, oh, how special and advanced I am now. I'm using all these wonderful techniques. Man, I must be hot stuff. So how do we stay humble?
Exactly. And I'll give you an example. As I thought I was getting to be, quote, hot stuff at this, I went back to London. I was living in London at the time. And I said, I'm going to follow what I've been taught. I want to make a mental movie. I'm going to get up out of my Chelsea apartment, go down on the tube to Piccadilly Circus and go in the Ferrari dealership. And I'm going to sign a check, for $79,000. And I'm going to drive out with my Ferrari and go in around Piccadilly Circus and then go back home and park it in my Chelsea apartment. Now, that was my movie. Okay. I made this movie every day for 30 days, just like they were teaching me down in Egypt is the way you manifest change in your life. But mm-hmm. I was missing something that Hakim and his people talked about a lot called the fire of heaven. And I didn't have a grasp on what they were talking about. But then doing that, it became loud and clear. I said, oh my golly, I'm doing this movie. I'm making all these beautiful images in my mind, but in my heart, it's almost like somebody's screaming in my head, this ain't going to happen. It is not going to happen. It is not right for you. It is not going to happen. And I was ignoring that. Okay? I just would not accept that. Whereas they were teaching that the movie that you're making about making a change in your life, you need to, it's going to be so one joyful feeling that when you're ready to let it go, it'll burst out of you and the universe will have to help materialize something like that or that very thing. And I was doing all the techniques right, but it did not have the substance, the love coming from my heart, the joy from my heart to have that Ferrari. And that was a very good lesson for me.
Right, very good.
What it really takes to manifest. If you're trying to manifest something into your life and it isn't right for you, it won't feel right, and you got to let it go and move on to the next thing.
Right.
I think Dr. Tom put something very well. I use that in one of my early modules. I teach this course in eight hours of four times 2 hour modules. In one of the early modules, Dr. Tom in Unity Magazine talked about something that impressed me a lot. He said, imagine us as a third world indigenous villager. It could be in Africa, it could be anywhere. And we know that there is good, clean drinking water in the aquifer beneath us. But no one has ever come to our village and taught us how to dig a well or given us the tools to dig a well. And so we do not have fresh drinking water. This is sort of exactly what I think this kind of material opens the door to. The mystery school traditions open the door to, because they are very practical, where the secret DVD kind of information from all these beautiful teachers didn't go in depth to what literally do you do to make changes in your life. the mystery schools were all about, literally, what do you do? This is step one, what you were taught at the to make the root chakra go into alignment. Step two, how to do the sacral. Everything about it is practical, pragmatic, and you graduate with your degree, if you want to look at it that way.
Okay? Right.
So, and I thought I thought Dr. Tom put that perfectly. So I invented the word imaginization to describe what they are and then put them into a course that basically takes you, gives you the tools to dig your well to manifest changes in your life. That's what I like.
I like to use the word visceral, you know, that when we teach at Unity here in Fort Worth, is the idea that, like you said, we're spirit, mind, body, beings, you know, we're all of it, aren't we? And until you integrate all three aspects, you know, you're not going to get the full understanding. You're not going to tap into that aquifer. You may have all the techniques in your mind, and you may even feel it as a good idea. But until all three are connected, it yep. seems that nothing really is going to happen. You know, it reminds me of a song by Leonard Cohen, bless his soul. He just passed away recently,
yes,
but one of my favorite artists. And just talking about what you said earlier, he says, you can add up the parts, but you won't have the sum. You can strike up the march, there is no drum. Every heart to love will come, but like a refugee. And I just love that line. Every heart to love will come, but like a refugee. In other words, you have to give up all your expectations about the way it's going to happen for you. You know, you have to be broken open, as you talk about, in order to receive it fully. And hopefully we don't all have to become literal refugees, but we become refugees in the sense we are willing to jettison everything else that gets in our way for that greater prize, right? For that greater understanding, for that greater imagining. And I think that's powerful stuff when we can do that. Then the universe seems to conspire, seems to rush towards us to fulfill
exactly.
that. Yeah.
And our modern term for that is called the law of attraction, but it's an ancient idea, and that the consciousness of the universe that's outside of us, manifested in our Amakuha, our higher self, which has access to our modern language called Akashic records and everything about, you know, everything, knows what's best for us and helps us through intuition to avoid this or do that, and we ignore it usually. But the idea of using the power of our imagination in the form of a creative visualization, the Egyptians called positive meditation, whereas passive meditation is more like what's taught today about getting quiet in the mind and being able to make thine eye become single, that kind of thinking. That was what you were taught in the mystery schools in your earliest years, and then you, as you progressed higher up the spine, if you will, higher up the chakra system into the more mind-centered chakras, you're working with this visualization technique that I'm talking about to manifest change.
So, well, it's interesting you should say that, because that has a strong correlation with Buddhist practice too, because the two kinds of meditation there, you know, shamatha, which is quietly abiding stillness, going into the silence, and then vipassana, which is more the investigation and the analysis, using the spiritual awareness of the various states of being, and then, you know, going deeper and deeper into the stillness, into the emptiness, which contains everything. So, you know, you have to have that basis of peacefulness, if you like, in order to add. I think sometimes we go into meditation and our minds won't shut up. You know, we're just trying to work it all out. We're throwing affirmations left, right, and center at stuff, hoping it's all going to come together. You know, like you said, you know, we're trying so hard, but we're missing the point. You know, our focus is too much on the Ferrari, and yet we don't really want to. We don't understand what that means. But so there has to be that release first, that letting go into the stillness, in order before we can become attuned. And it sounds like the paths that you're suggesting, you know, the layout is very sequential, isn't it? It builds a strong foundation. It's almost like a pyramid.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, to use the Egyptian phrases, I avoid using them, but think of it like this. Our spine system, the most popular axiom in the Egyptian sacred mystery schools is as above, so below. And they are seven densities of life in the cosmos, if you will. And there are seven chakra centers along our spine. The Nile River was equivalent of a spine, and the seven temples that we travel to in this workshop, where you started on the root chakra and worked your way up to the crown chakra for the opening of the way and to experience what you and I would call a shamanic experience. And the Egyptians believed that that this chakra system reflected the divinity of the cosmos within our own body, so they called the spine the Jed, and this will probably ring very true. Guess who took a course in the mystery, sacred mysteries at USC in 1962 from Joseph Campbell, and saw that and invented the Star Wars discipline. George Lucas took this same material at USC as an undergrad, invented the Star Wars system and the Jedi Knights, and learned how to have the Force be with you, and Hollywoodified this same material.
There we go. Hollywood.
And that's funny. That. It's true. It's a true story. He admits it.
I know. It is fascinating. Yeah. And of course, as we said earlier, you know, it's all one ultimately, isn't it? Everybody's search, as Joseph Campbell wrote in this wonderful book, you know, Hero of a Thousand with a Thousand Faces. You know, there are thousands of myths and heroes in those myths, and yet they really point to the one underlying archetype here of our own personal journey. You know, and we seem to go through the same patterns of crossing the threshold into the unknown and receiving the test and then receiving the gift and coming back. Like you said, it's coming back. And you had that experience yourself where you were told, you know, go back to the West. You know, your work is there. There's things for you to do. We have just a few minutes left. If people want to find out more about you, Jim, or your books and items, give us some links here.
Okay, I've just purchased a new domain name again, because this is the principles at United Worldwide Ministries believe that the word mystics is better for this. So my new domain, where I moved just yesterday, moved over the entire website, and I'm going to be working with a little bit, is www.secretsofmystics.com, as it sounds.
Okay.
Just like it sounds. And on there, they will see the home study course called the Imaginization Album. And that summarizes what I teach in the workshop live for people that cannot either get to my workshop or, you know, I haven't been lucky enough to be invited to come to their church yet and teach the teachings. So they don't have to really wait on me. This is what Hakim and the Sejdi were all about, saying when you go back to America, you're just one guy. You know, you got to get in a recording studio, make this, and have it widely available. So the album itself initiates all seven of the chakras, called the Imaginization Album in the Egyptian way, and it's easily available. They can go to the website, order. It's $40, and you know, I'll send it out to them. Okay.
Yeah. All right,
and if there are any ministers to churches out there, this is what my discussions at the Village are about with Jim Blake and the other people, and such as you, Paul, is to how we're going to take this work out and make it, you know, fit a little more into the system, the SEE system, and the adult educational system, and for the ministers themselves, because there's something to this work. The Fillmore certainly believed in it.
No, oh, yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, we got to somehow make it adaptable.
Charles M. Little Egyptian mysticism. In fact, the Unity Wings that we often use in Unity churches originate in Egyptian spirituality.
Yeah, the first church I walked into, I'm saying there's the sun disk of Akhenaten with the wings of Isis staring at me above the pulpit. So
there
they have the doves of peace, and there's this old ancient sacred mystery school symbol. I said, what is the genesis here? And so, boy, I started learning a lot about unity at that point.
Yeah, fascinating. All right, we got a minute left. Can you give us some words of advice for the listeners today, something practical that they can embody in their lives? Of course, this is Thanksgiving week, and many of us are focusing on gratitude. But what else have you got up your sleeve that you could teach us right now, Jim?
That the primary teaching of the mystery schools that has survived into all the world's religions are that you are an eternal spiritual being capable of more than you could ever dream of, and all you have to do is want to accomplish it and believe you are worthy of accomplishing it. If you will accept that, nothing stands in your way.
Wow, good. I love that. All right, let me tell you about next week's show, and then we'll say goodbye to Jim. Next week, John D. Dunn, Buddhist scholar and distinguished professor of contemplative humanities at the Center for Healthy Minds at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, joins me. That's a mouthful, isn't it? Professor of Contemplative Humanities at the Center for Healthy Minds at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I had dinner with him and listened to him lecture a couple of months ago. Fascinating person, very, very bright indeed. He translated for the Dalai Lama for a number of years and is a great Sanskrit scholar, as among other things. So he's going to join me, and we're going to talk about healthy-mindedness and how to find integration in our lives. That should be a fascinating one. But this has been a wonderful one, too, with Jim Phillips. Thank you, Jim, for being with us today.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate the opportunity to reach out and to have a further discussion with you and anyone else.
Lovely, and thanks for listening, folks. Happy Thanksgiving, and hopefully you can tune in next week to listen to John D. Dunn and his fascinating understandings. All right, take care. See you then. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Somewhere, tucked away in the Unity Library archives in Unity Village, Missouri, you can find a secret treasure. They are the scripts from Unity co-founder Charles Fillmore's early days on broadcast radio, the teachings of Unity's founders, almost 100 years old. Now, for the first time in history, you can hear them through the power of the Internet. Join Bob Brock every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, for Unity Classic Radio, Words from Our Past. Discover the wisdom of Charles Fillmore's talks and of other Unity Radio speakers read on the air again. Call in your comments and questions as Bob and his special guests revisit Unity Radio talks of the past, along with historical background from the early days of the Unity movement. That's Unity Classic Radio, Words from Our Past, every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, right here on Unity FM, the voice of an awakening world.
To paraphrase Einstein, I can't solve a problem at the level of the problem. The world's great religions tell us to treat others as we would like to be treated. Remembering that thought makes it a little easier for me to become a peacemaker, a bringer of love when conflict appears. When I choose to be a peacemaker, a loving response or sometimes silence replaces the snappy comeback to an unkind statement directed my way. The momentary satisfaction of winning an argument gives way to the deeper satisfaction of helping to create a more peaceful world, a world where destructive conflict no longer has a place. Peace really can begin with me.
To find a Unity Church near you, please visit our website at www.unity.org.
Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.